All right. So welcome. I'm here with Rebecca Capps.
Hey, Jen.
Good to have you here.
So good to be here.
So fun. We just had a good laugh as we did some troubleshooting.
Yeah, so, my beautiful name on here that we don't know how to take off.
So everybody will know who you are the whole time.
Yes, we're rolling with it and the gamer headphones.
Tune in, tune out. All right, so let me give you guys a heads up. Rebecca Capps is a holistic therapist, wellness coach, and she is the CEO of Mind Body Thrive. She has a decade of experience in mental health, and she has become an expert in treating eating disorder, body image issues through her integrative approach. She created Mind Body Thrive to empower women to break free from the harmful cycle of disordered eating and negative body image through the combination of psychotherapy, mindfulness practices, and intuitive eating. Her approach is designed to help others heal their relationship with food and their bodies so they can thrive in life.
Thank you. Yeah. Good to be here.
So you felt like a natural fit for a guest for me because your work, it's adjacent, but it's certainly related to everything that I'm doing with women's sexuality. And so I was thrilled that you were game for being on.
I'm game. I love being in your orbit and seeing what you're up to these days and just combining our efforts, because you're right. Body image, in fact, it intersects with what you're doing in the sex and sexuality realm.
Yeah. So give, I guess, a quick history of like, how did you get into this work? And, you know, I just talked about my trajectory. And so I'm always curious kind of with others, how they got there.
Yes. Well, I developed a life-threatening eating disorder by the age of 11. I was hospitalized. I was experiencing like organ failure and languo, and as a lot of things as a result of anorexia nervosa. And I didn't know what was going on with me, but it just was obsessional in quality, and I would say trauma-based. And it took a long time and a good therapist to help me on my journey. And yeah, it's just a gift to do what I do, to connect with women and to empower them the same way that a therapist and a treatment team helped me to heal. So that's kind of the highlight, not the highlight reel, but just the summary of why I do what I do. And I'm sure what I do know about your story, you're similar. It's like we get into this profession because we want to heal ourselves, and it's more than just a profession.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's amazing when there is lived experience as well as clinical experience. I think it really makes for a strong practitioner. And you've got the academic side of things with your LMFT. And then you also do the coaching, which really gives you a lot of flexibility and ways to work with people with different situations.
I appreciate that. And I like that you're embracing both as well as a combined way to practice.
Yeah, I think it's helpful, and people need different things. Some people need every week and they want that side of things. And sometimes it's more of a structured coaching that is really going to move them forward.
So. Give the people what they want.
Okay, so let's jump in. Let's talk about specifically, how do you see body image showing up in problematic ways for intimacy?
Well, gosh, in a multitude of ways, really. Like if you're body conscious and dissatisfied with how you look, you're going to feel hesitant being naked or just physically intimate. And that can lead to decreased sexual desire or avoidance of things altogether. What else? Like, obviously, anxiety happens, or stress, when we're really worried about our bodies. Yeah. And it can lead to difficulties in achieving orgasm, which in my opinion, and probably yours too, is very important to have that release and that connection with someone, that deep intimacy. And right. Also,
so if you've got this whole chatter and you're going in your head, it's hard. It's not just like it's physically hard. It's psychologically hard, right? You can't let go. Totally. You can't just be in the moment.
That's precisely it. You're just like, oh, buzzing. You're not embodied or present, as you say, or enjoying the experience of connection. Because for the anorexic and the anorexic experience, they are often people pleasers who struggle to feel worthy at all, to feel worthy, not just of food, but of intimate connections and to be truly seen. They don't feel worthy enough to take up space or to set boundaries, things like that.
Right. So that makes sense. It's like, it's hard to, of course, then drop into the moment and just enjoy it and let organically what could happen, happen.
Yeah. And two, our core beliefs play a big part of this, manifest in every corner of our lives. We're in this like trance of unworthiness is like, are you familiar? I love like Tara Brach, her work. And she talks about that and how beliefs are really like thoughts that we just keep thinking over and over again. And it's like, if we have these fear-based thoughts about ourselves that turn into these feelings of unworthiness,
and it seems like facts, right? Like, 'cause
you're
reinforcing it. You're looking for evidence all around that reinforces it. And then it just seems like it's a fact when it's really just a belief.
Yes. Confirmation bias is huge. You're just, like you said, it's like, we're looking for it to say I'm unworthy. So we choose these partners who mirror that back and these experiences where we fall silent. Mm-hmm. So yeah. It can impact a lot.
Don't hear it back. Sometimes the partners are like, wait, what's going on? I love your body. I you're beautiful. And you're like, you don't know, or, you know, talk a little bit about from the partner perspective or what you knew, as how partners can help somebody who's, you know, struggling with not even eating disorder necessarily. It doesn't even have to rise to that level, but just really body image issues.
Yeah. Well, first, there needs to be an open dialogue. You really have to communicate. The sufferer has to communicate with their partner and encourage a discussion around how your partner can best support you, or even just stating out loud when you are in a disembodied state where it's hard to connect emotionally, to be in a disassociative state, which is very common for sufferers or even like trauma survivors. And if there's something that is hard to talk about, I like nonviolent communication. I don't know if you like that as a framework of communication too. And obviously the I statements, which I'm sure every therapist talks about for communication tools, but yeah. And some people in certain realms, have code words. Like, I'm sure you could speak to that in terms of like the BDSM or whatever. Yeah.
BDSM?
Or what is it? BDSM. Obviously, I'm not in that world. What's the damn acronym?
BDSM. But the, I guess what gets confusing, you know, is that partners feel like it's their subjective reality is like, no, you look great. And I think you're great. And that's what should matter. But it's hard because there's actually a whole dialogue going internally. And so having open conversation to understand, I mean, we all know this, right? We have inner conversations with ourselves and we have lots of self-confidence about whatever it is. And your partner, that might seem invisible to them, but it's critical for, you know, for intimacy.
You bring up a good point. And I think that's why therapy can be really useful, going together to hammer out these kind of details and to get to the underlying root of it, which is trauma or attachment issues or a whole host of things. Just, it's a mental disorder, eating disorders and like body image. So it's a lot. And also I would direct the partners to places like NIDA where they can really absorb a lot of different kind of educational materials on how to best. Yeah.
Okay. How would you say that media influences beauty and image of self?
Oh my gosh. Obviously. Yeah. Well, where do I start, Jen? No. Well, I'll start with like the obvious unrealistic standards that the media portrays. Like approximately, I think it's like 91% of women feel unhappy with their bodies. And then they resort to dieting, you know, just to achieve these unrealistic standards. And then there's like the objectification of bodies in media that can contribute. And when people are treated like as objects or sexualized just for their appearance, it can lead to feelings of self-objectification and just really low self-worth and
just constant comparison. Right, to what they see in media and what they've been told they're supposed to look like.
Yeah, I even see it with my son. Like, I try not to put him on the screens, but if mama has to cook, like, he's watching something. And the other day, it was like talking about one of his shows, like the little girl, the way they were talking about her was just about her looks and beauty. And I'm like, really, this thing again? And I changed it, but still, right. Yeah. So
boys
there's
are strong
that.
And smart and girls are pretty.
Exactly. It's like, come on, not this again. So it's like a societal stigmatization. I can't BDSM stigmatization of certain like just body types and sizes. And then, it just creates this whole narrative of essentially fat phobia, racism, sexism, and other forms of discrimination that just defines this narrow, myopic beauty ideal. Mm-hmm. It's just this huge pressure to conform. So I mean, I could go on and on, but we need to challenge the status quo and to promote a more diverse and inclusive representation of what beauty is and means.
I agree. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, it's interesting. I've given a couple lectures that talk about different elements that affect women's sexuality, and body image is just the one that really, really hit everybody present and got the most airtime, because that is the one that is this kind of sleeper cell, like problematic one that just really affects people.
Yeah.
So that's why we're doing the show today.
Uh-huh.
let's see. So let's talk about this. Actually, I thought this was an interesting question. That we got from a listener. How does body image intersect with gender identity specifically?
Yeah. So, I mean, I feel like you could speak to that more, but obviously there are people who feel like they were born in the wrong body, and it's, how can you open up and feel vulnerable or like in intimate ways when you're feeling like you're not in the right body? I mean, what do you?
Yeah, I find, you know, it's interesting because sort of depending on where they are in their gender identity.
Yeah.
Non-binary is sort of one camp where sometimes maybe it's fluid, they're back and forth, or they feel like neither. I find that those folks have an easier time with some intimacy, but the folks sometimes that are completely transgender and they don't feel like they are at all in the right, they are not presenting as the sex they feel. It can be really tricky to navigate intimate relationships because having your body touched reminds you of your body.
Yes.
Having your body seen, having your body, you know, and forget penetration. Like if you, you know, it's like, and so I've found that most of those folks are really hesitant, the younger ones anyway, that I've worked with have been kind of hesitant to have sexual relationships. They tend to have it be more, romantic, you know, they'll kind of stay in that camp of like, they'll have emotional availability and lots of, texting and, you know, long distance relationships and that type of thing. But actual, sexual contact can be very, triggering.
Gosh, you summarized that perfectly. And that's exactly what I was thinking about in my mind, the transgender experience. And it's important for us as clinicians and just those who are listening to acknowledge that everyone's experience with body image issues are unique and valid. And by understanding the different ways that body image can affect people of all genders and so on and so forth.
I would say too, though, like the signaling that we do as clinicians, like if we're willing to talk about it, and I've done this with couples too, we're normalizing couples that are you know, gender nonconforming, like,
yeah,
talk about like the logistics of this. Are you comfortable with penetration? What do you need them to know about your body? If you don't feel like, if you are a person born with breasts and you don't like breasts, you don't feel like your breasts are part of you, you don't want them touched. That's going to be a reminder of, you know, your mismatch, just like having a period can be. It really causes like dysphoria.
Yes. So
it's interesting. The other piece of this is sexual orientation, which is who you're attracted to.
Yeah.
And I did want to kind of like parse this out because a lot of times those two populations get mixed and they're really different. But sexual orientation and body image, I find is kind of interesting. When I was doing my dissertation, and it was a lot of research about women and specifically lesbian women, what I learned is that a lot of times same-sex attracted women don't buy into media in the same way. They're more rejecting, sort of like a feminist, you know, approach of like, I'm not going to listen, you know, I'm not appealing to the male gaze. And so I'm not going to buy into it. And historically, not always, of course, but the lesbian profile can also have a range of presentations. So they're not adhering to femininity. And body size can also vary greatly. And there's more permission, I would say, within the lesbian community to have different body sizes and presentations and comfortability with that.
There are different like subtypes of categories of how they identify. Interesting.
But there's also just, I think, more acceptance of the range. And so there isn't the same, I don't know, there isn't the same culture of critique, inner critique or cultural critique with body image. So I think that's a plus.
That's endlessly fascinating. And I love that you're so, like, you're an expert in that. And I remember at UCSB, my UCSB days, I read a lot of like Adrienne Rich. I'm sure you're familiar with like her. And I need more titles and people to absorb. So if you have any good authors, let me know.
Yeah, absolutely. I've got this great book. It's a take on, I'm looking at my bookshelf. instead of Our Bodies, Ourselves, it's called Trans Bodies.
Oh, cool.
Trans Bodies, Trans Cells, I think it is. Yeah, and it's sort of a good guide for that. Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's see, switching gears. Now my work is more focused on women, but do you find that there are certain body image concerns that tend to be more prevalent with those who identify as female versus male?
Yes. I would say men are more preoccupied with like muscles and masculinity, if that's what you're asking. And I'm trying to think of what else.
Size of their penis?
No, they're obsessed with it.
They really are.
just women, the ones I work with, are just obsessed with shrinking their bodies. And they
feel interesting. Men want to get bigger, and that's a sign of masculinity, and women want to get smaller, and that's a sign of femininity.
And it's symbolic, isn't it? And I hate to take it to the patriarchy, but just like, we're just meant to be in this box of like, like no voice, no opinion. Okay. Right. Not into that.
Body mass.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. So yeah, that's kind of what I would say,
but there's definitely, and I've seen this more in the gay men that I've worked with, but there's definitely some preoccupation with thinness.
Yeah. The thin ideal. Absolutely. Yeah. So we're out here fighting it.
Let's see, what are some strategies you can suggest for someone who is struggling with body image and feeling self-conscious during sex?
Yes. So, I mean, obviously I like breath work, but if you're not feeling safe in that moment, it's okay to pause and to talk to your partner. And ideally you would create a sense of safety even beforehand, but yeah, I think it's just so important to note too, like the negative cognitive distortions. I mean, I know that CBT is at times boring, but it's the core of all of this, where thoughts become things. So noting and labeling and externalizing what we are feeling in that moment. And I also like to engage with my senses. DBT
skills. Give some examples because the listeners might not be therapists. They might not know exactly what you mean by cognitive distortions. Oh. Like maybe two or three common ones that would apply
sure. to
that situation.
So common ones from like the anorexic profile or just an eating disorder profile would be like black and white thinking, very rigid of like, oh, I look, it's like you either think you look so amazing or horrible. Or in for the anorexic, in her mind, while she's intimate, she's probably saying to herself, I look fat, auga, like this is not safe. He or she is thinking some kind of way about me. And then you're just in your head. Yeah. And again, taking you out of that experience of embodiment and fun, ideally. So yeah, noting, ideally, we can find ways to think dialectically, meaning like there are shades of gray here, mm-hmm. and it's not the end of the world. Then there's, you know, should statements where I should be the thin ideal, or however your mind might be taking this. And that's just, it creates a lot of self-judgment, self-blame. Mm-hmm. And there's also like overgeneralization where you see things as like this never-ending pattern of defeat, mm-hmm. including your mental health. And you could be in your head while you're trying to be intimate and you're telling yourself, oh my gosh, it's always going to be like this. Mm-hmm. And you can go into that freeze response where you're just shutting right. down.
And that's when we see a lot of avoidance, where it's just like, I'm tired, or, you know, I don't want it, or, but there's mm-hmm. really an exploration of like, what is the inhibitor? What's getting in the way of mm-hmm. desire? And mm-hmm. yeah, some allowance for things to not be perfect.
Absolutely. Like perfection, if that's what you're going with, you're already setting yourself up for failure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So this is not about perfection. Sex is about an experience, and sometimes it's experience with self, but sometimes it's experience with partner. But yeah, there's no perfection in that.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure you have a lot to say on that piece, like, and the perfectionism, I'm sure it shows up in your work too, even though it's not body image related.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like it's interesting because I work with couples of different ages. Younger couples tend to come in with higher expectations of perfection. Like they've been watching TV, they've been watching porn, they're used to having, you know, tighter bodies. I find other couples in their 60s, couples in their 70s, they're not trying.
Oh, I know. They realize, isn't it interesting? Like over time you realize, yeah, it's like life is short. Let's do this. Mm-hmm. literally and figuratively. No. But yeah.
let's just enjoy each other's bodies, and we might look a little different than we used to, but who cares, right? This mm-hmm. is about pleasure and connection and I don't know, playfulness.
Uh-huh. I agree. It's tough age, you know, outside of the conversation though, where there's like sexual trauma, not to go there, but like sexual trauma and eating disorders, we can't talk about body image and intimacy without like that, because they're co-occurring disorders oftentimes. Studies reveal, and I believe the statistics, that up to 50% of individuals with EDs have also experienced sexual trauma. And women who experience sexual abuse are four times as likely or at the risk to develop eating disorders. So it's a big deal, and it's hard to feel safe enough at times to be intimate and immerse yourself in that experience.
Yeah. So trauma work might be really front and center, right?
Yeah.
Trauma, and that can be through, I usually use EMDR, but there's mm-hmm. you know, other mechanisms too, but not trying to just push through, rather addressing the trauma, processing it. So that
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You absolutely have to. I adhere to that. Like the only way out is through. Like I never promise therapy to be like a good time initially. It hurts. It's like, why am I doing this? But then when you get through on the other side, all facets of life they open up again, including that of like our intimate partnerships and sex.
I like to say that a lot of times I see it as like, I don't know if you've ever had an injury, but when you have scar tissue,
yeah,
and it hurts. It hurts. It's all locked in and it hurts to touch. It hurts. And so a lot of times there's just avoidance of the whole thing. But once you get in and start massaging it, you start having blood flow, you start having a release of things around that area. You know, the muscles let go and the scar tissue breaks up. And then you've got movement again, rather than being in that locked position. And it just, therapy does that. It helps to put a little oxygen in there. It helps to start to get some perspective because you've got a little distance from the trauma. And you
I love that.
Have some flexibility again.
It's a great metaphor. And otherwise it's like your muscles, like you atrophy if you avoid and you continue to do that. And that's why we live in these dissociated states and we're always checking out with social media or God knows what else. So I like that. I'm going to steal that zinger.
Let's talk about pregnancy and body.
Oh gosh.
Right. I would imagine that that could be a doozy.
A huge doozy. I mean, I have been in recovery from an eating disorder, like I said, since like 11 or 12. And when I got pregnant, it's like, wow, that's a whole new level and layer of healing that I found myself going through. And just, I hadn't weighed myself. Like I don't weigh myself. That's part of my recovery. But when you are there for weekly check-ins and it's like the scale goes up and then you're dealing with the whole medical system and how they talk about bodies and BMI and all the things, it's like, yeah, it's intense. And then there are people who just feel like strangers who just feel like it's okay to come up and touch your stomach, which I know it's the intention is there, but there's a difference between intention and impact, as you know.
Yeah.
I mean, I have a lot to say about this.
Yeah. And also the conversation with yourself in terms of body image and attractiveness and, you know, knowing it, like you have to grow this baby. And so your body's going to change. And having that integration and that kind conversation with yourself.
Yeah.
And then afterwards too, right? Like having, so returning to sexual interest and desire and relationship post-birth. With a different, possibly a different body.
Not even possibly, Jen.
Some people seem like they just bounce right back.
Oh, I know. I know. Part. I'm like, what the heck? The bounce back. Well, I did not bounce back. It was, and I allowed myself that time. And I'm like, I'm really going to click into gear here with practicing what I preach. And I'm glad because it, this work inspires me to do that. And going back to like the trans discussion that you were talking about, where it's like, you have to talk about, maybe I don't want to be touched with the breasts. It made me think in that moment of post-pregnancy and how I had these bittersweet feelings of like breastfeeding and just, obviously I love my son, but then there was this other part of me that just, it was interesting and weird to have this little being on my breast. And it's just, I could see how that would be hard too with like sexual trauma kind of clients. And yeah, I don't know where I'm going with this, but just, you know.
Yeah. It's having a baby involves your body.
Yes. There we go.
During the growing body and then afterwards. Yeah. So of course it's like, if you're most of the time living up here and you don't necessarily live down here, good luck. It's part of that process. And that little thing is attached to you and it needs holding. And so, I mean, it's interesting. I also have found that I've worked with a lot of clients after birth, and that process of parenting can also be reparenting yourself.
It is 100% that. Like, I guess what I was getting at is like, you're right. It's like a mirror of our attachment wounds almost. And a mirror to what parts of us still require healing and accepting and loving all parts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Let's see. advice you would offer to someone struggling with negative body image? Maybe it doesn't rise to the level of disordered eating or eating disorder. Let's say that it's disordered eating. They might be preoccupied with that, but how that connected to their sex life, like any.
Okay. So the question is advice for someone who's struggling with body image.
Yeah. As it relates to wanting a sex life.
Okay. Very well. I like body neutral statements, body neutrality, because it's kind of hard to just be like body positivity when you really feel like you hate your body. Mm-hmm. So body neutral statements, like I choose to focus on my body's abilities rather than its appearance, or my body is constantly changing and that's okay.
So wait, the first one would be like, I value my body for its strength and its health.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Just like, or even like the utilitarian purpose of it versus it, how it looks, things like that, just shifting the narrative in the mind and focusing on safety and pleasure, not just performance in sex. Yeah. Right. Like, instead of focusing on how you look and your body, it's directing the focus onto the pleasure of you and what you're sharing in the moment with your partner to help you relax.
I would say maybe that requires you understanding your own erotic template, you know, what turns on versus, because you've mentioned performative, and I find that that really happens a lot with
yes. women
is trying to please the partner and look good and sound good and seem like a hot lover. Mm. And
yes.
really understanding what do I want and what turns me on, and having first of all, knowing what that is, but then second, having the courage to ask for it relationally.
Absolutely. Intimacy is about so much more than like physical components. And it's about knowing who you are, what your needs are, and that you're inherently worthy to speak up about those needs.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think too, some folks I found have been very, they're sort of disembodied. And so they're really hyper-focused on partner pleasure.
Yes.
Which, you know, is one strategy, but it's not a very rewarding strategy for yourself. Ultimately,
it's a give and take, or at least from our perspective, it should be, because that's life. And otherwise you're just giving. And what's left? Life, even though not always easy or fun, but it is meant to be enjoyed and to find that pleasure.
Yeah, I would agree. I feel like also sexuality. I mean, if you're trying to have a baby, then perhaps there's a function.
Sure. About,
procreation. But for the most part, sexuality is really about play. It's about connection. It's about feeling good. It's about exploration. And if you're chattering about your body image, it's really hard to have any of that. It's hard to want any of that.
It's yes. You're always just living in the cerebral realm. Mm-hmm. And that's why like somatic practices and yoga are just so good. I would argue for everyone, but just definitely those who struggle.
How does going to yoga or Pilates or doing something that's more body-based, how does that help with the chatter?
Because it connects you with breath, prana, like life force, mm-hmm. and helps you to get outside of like that cerebral realm and to calm yourself and be in that parasympathetic state. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it helps with a lot, or at least it definitely did with me. And I appreciate you inviting me.
So, yeah, yeah. It helps the integration. I find that it helps remind you that you have a strong body that can do things. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's interesting. I'm a big fan of yoga. Pilates, I find to be a little slow. I love yoga. But
I know. I appreciate you inviting me to Emma's classes. One day I'll get there. I'm glad we're here now. And like, we got to have like brunch the other day. Like, it is wild after having a baby.
Yeah. So tell us what you're up to, just kind of to close us out. Like,
oh, yeah. What am I up to? You mean, okay, so I've been managing my private practice and I'm really enjoying it, but I am also creating like different programs, the Mind Body Thrive program and membership. And I have 18 chapters now of a book that.
Wow, good for you.
Thanks. We'll see when I need to put a date out there and just get birth that baby.
Yeah.
But I feel like I'm always up to something, and you're kind of like that too, or we're just like enjoying the experience of learning and connecting and just being out there. But I love what I do, and I love connecting with women like yourself who are just empowering others to enjoy their bodies and to express themselves freely without the past getting in the way or the negative self-talk. So this is a true pleasure to be here with you.
Awesome. I agree. So I know we can see it to some degree on your screen, but tell us where to find you.
This dang app. You can find me at mindbodythrive.com is my website, or at Rebecca Capps Counseling on Instagram. I couldn't get Mind Body Thrive on Instagram because someone already took it. So it is my name. We'll see. And yeah, just follow along. And I do a weekly newsletter if you want to sign up as well, with little tips and tricks and recipes.
So that would be at Mind Body Thrive as well.
Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate having you on. And
thanks, Jen. Yeah.
Talk soon. All right.
Is it still recording?
No, wait, it is, but I got to figure out how to stop.
This is going to be in it.